Controversial would be an understatement.
And could you flesh that out a bit?
Well, basically, the reason I see it is because Iran has a pipeline going through Armenia up north and into the sea above. So that's their gateway to Europe to get their gas out. And if Azerbaijan decides to take over that part of Armenia and cut that tie off, now Azerbaijan has his gas and they see conflict. So Iran, I think, is only thinking about their pipeline and protecting it.
What other countries are involved?
Well, the major player here is Russia. Russia's always been sort of like the abusive big brother of Armenia since Armenia became independent. And right now, they're practically the peacekeepers in the Artsakh region, protecting the people, so-called protecting the people there.
And Turkey?
Well, Turkey's been the partner of Azerbaijan, and they've come out, or Erdogan has come out and said, we are one people, two states. So basically, they see themselves as the same.
Are they the same?
Not really. They're actually once majority Sunnite, one's majority Shiite. But for some reason, they seem to feel like they're like brothers. Erdogan and Aliyev, the president of Azerbaijan, are seen together quite often. And Aliyev sees Erdogan as a leader of the world.
On that note, Peter Balwanian, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Politics or Pedagogy.
Thank you again, John.
This is John Crumshaw for KPFK, Politics or Pedagogy. For the Pacifica Radio Archives collection of Martin Luther King's speeches or a larger collection of Voices That Changed the World, call 818-985-5735 and press 2 to make your pledge. Like what you hear on KPFK? Call 818-985-5735 and press 2 to become a sustaining member.
90.7 KPFK, Los Angeles.
Victorian. She began to get harassed on social media by a group calling itself We Are Tove or We Are Good. Their website boasts a dedication to combating anti-Semitism and debunking misinformation. And while claiming to be a beacon of truth, unity, and positivity, just following the announcement of this year's valedictorian, We Are Tove reportedly launched a dishonest and defamatory attack against Asna and created and circulated a petition calling upon USC to withdraw her designation of valedictorian. By last Tuesday, the USC provost acquiesced to the Zionist bullying campaign, announcing the cancellation of the valedictorian commencement address for the first time, claiming an alleged security concern. When the outrage at USC's silencing decision grew into a cacophony, they canceled all of their scheduled commencement speakers. On Wednesday, Columbia University President Manu Shafiq, former law school dean and task force on anti-Semitism co-chair David Scheiser, and Board of Trustees co-chairs Claire Shipman and David Greenwald went to Capitol Hill to testify in front of the House Committee on Education and the Workforce, the same committee whose previous hearings, presumably focused on anti-Semitism, played an integral role in forcing the presidents of Harvard University and the University of Pennsylvania to resign. With the committee and supporters of Israel's apartheid rule over Palestinians and the state's continuing genocidal assault on the over 2 million people in Gaza want to frame as an issue of campus anti-Semitism is actually pro-Palestine speech. And in response to much pro-humanity and pro-Palestine speech coming from their students and faculty, Columbia's administration has chosen to harshly crack down on First Amendment-protected political speech since October by suspending student groups that advocate for Palestine and creating an amorphous task force on anti-Semitism that students and faculty alike fear will only serve to punish criticism of Israel's actions and policies. Columbia's readiness to severely discipline students advocating for Palestinian rights has not been singular. It is one of multiple schools, including California's Pomona College and Tennessee's Vanderbilt University, that have suspended, evicted, and even expelled students protesting against Israel's genocidal war on Gaza in recent weeks. I am very grateful to have two esteemed guests to discuss the issue of Zionist McCarthyism on American campuses today. Dr. Mohammed Abdu is a North African Egyptian activist scholar of indigenous, Black, critical race, and Islamic studies, among other disciplines. He has done extensive fieldwork in the Middle East, North Africa, Asia, and Turtle Island. This year, he is the Arkapita Visiting Assistant Professor of Middle Eastern, South Asian, and African Studies at Columbia University. He is the author of Islam and Anarchism, Relationships and Resonances. His scholarship and writings have appeared in the Journals of Political Theory, Settler Colonial, and Anarchist Development in Cultural Studies, among others. In 2019, he wrote his transnational ethnographic and historical archival PhD dissertation on Islam and queer Muslims, identity and sexuality in the contemporary. It is my pleasure to welcome Mohammed Abdu to Middle East in Focus.
Shalom Aleichem, Esti, Salaam Alaikum. It's such an honor to be with you and the esteemed Dr. Kelly. Thank you very much for having me.
And we are very happy to have you. And as suggested, Robin D.G. Kelly is an educator, historian, and author. Growing up in Harlem, Washington area heights of New York, he participated in the Black Panther Party's free breakfast program as a child and attended graduate school here at the University of California, Los Angeles, receiving his master's in African American history and his doctorate in American history. His professional career spans several decades and universities across the country, including as the William B. Ransford Professor of Cultural and Historical Studies at Columbia University from 2003 to 2006. Luckily for us curious Angelenos, Robin Kelly was appointed the Gary B. Nash Professor of American History at his alma mater, UCLA, in the fall of 2011, a position he continues to hold. Robin Kelly has published several books on race relations, as well as African-American culture, music, and history, including Yo Mama's Dysfunctional, Fighting the Culture Wars in Urban America, Africa Speaks, America Answers, and the very popular Freedom Dreams, The Black Radical Imagination. Robin has also written over 100 articles featured in numerous publications, including the New York Times and Rolling Stone, and continues to be a very busy international lecturer today. It is my honor to welcome Dr. Robin D.G. Kelly to Middle East in Focus.
Thank you, Esti. It's so great to be with you and to be with the great Mohammed Abdu. My dream was, I had a dream that you testified before those fools on Capitol Hill and you destroyed them in the same way Paul Robeson destroyed them in 1956. So, I mean, that's, you know, I'm just honored to be here in this space. So we'll see.
The honor is all mine, Dr. Thank you.
We're obviously all very happy to be here. Robin, I'm going to start with you. What does history teach us about this moment of quickly escalating oppressive actions by university administrators across the country in response to the considerable shift in even mainstream discourse around Israel's now 6-month-long genocidal assault on Gaza, particularly in the wake of the fatal targeting of seven World Central Kitchen aid workers 2 weeks ago, as we watch individuals in positions of power tying themselves in knots, attempting to help maintain the status quo of unfettered U.S. support for Israeli apartheid? And do you think the phrase Zionist McCarthyism accurately describes what we are experiencing on and off U.S. campuses today?
Right. Thank you. So I think Zionist McCarthyism works only insofar as it's shorthand for really an entire century of Red Scares going back like to the First World War. And it speaks to a very specific moment in the 1950s. And one of the things I'm concerned about is that if we use McCarthyism too much, we're going to be locked into this idea that somehow that moment in the 50s was exceptional, when in fact, what we're witnessing today is simply the escalation of more than a century of this kind of repression on college campuses. You know, you could go back, and I won't tell a whole history here, but I mean, even if you think about, you know, the times after McCarthyism, the most intense repression took place on college campuses pretty much, you know, in the 60s, 70s and on. The free speech movement actually was launched against a communist speaker ban at Berkeley. And this is after McCarthyism. All these mass arrests on campuses over anti-war protests. So what we're seeing is very similar. And even on the question of Israel, you could talk about Wayne State in 1968. You know, you could talk about, University of Illinois Chicago campus. There's a lot of campuses where people are organizing around Palestinian freedom in the 60s and 70s, for which college presidents consistently push to have people fired, have students expelled. The editor of South End, John Watson, who was a very radical activist, militant, member of the League of Revolutionary Black Workers, he was running articles about Fatah in the South End, the Wayne State newspaper back in like 1968, 69, and they pushed him out. The president of Wayne State pushed him out. So, you know, and one last thing I should add is that, again, this is an escalation, but even if you look at what has been happening just post 9/11, we're going to talk about this later, but I was at Columbia, you know, when Joseph Mossad was experiencing intense repression from the moment he walked on that campus. I mean, he got there in 1999, and he was subject to attacks from the so-called David Project, from his own colleagues. They made that dishonest film, Columbia Unbecoming. The New York Post attacked them, and the Columbia Spectator, which has gone a long way. Back in those days, they were attacking Joseph Mossad. Wow. And I would ask anyone, I mean, if you just look at some of the statements that were made back 2003, 2004, 2005, you're going to see something very, very similar to what we're seeing now. And one final thing is that even the lead up to October 7th, you have to remember, that even if we exclude 2014, just think about what happened in the spring of 2023 when Fatima Musa Mohammed faced death threats for criticizing Israel at her commencement speech at City University of New York Law School. And she's Yemeni born, and she condemned the occupation. She condemned police violence in the United States and got faced a lot of repression for that. So it was already there. I've never seen a college president in the United States take an action or take a position that was, I would argue, not beholden to the donors. I should say it that way.
Yes, and I fear we're up for another season of oppression from college commencement speeches. Mohammed, on Wednesday, Elise Stefanik, the highest-ranking woman in the Republican House caucus, who rose to that position, having spent the last 3 years supporting Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election, asked Columbia President Shafiq about you during the hearing on Capitol Hill, falsely characterizing your comments, I should add. Were you watching or listening to that hearing live? what, if anything, surprised you about the hearing? And I have to ask, had you actually been terminated by Colombia before President Shafik stated that as a fact, adding that you will never teach at Colombia again, live on national TV?
First of all, again, assalamu alaikum and happy Passover and shalom alaikum. From Lenin Lenape territory and 531 years of ongoing genocide in the settler colony, as well as ongoing afterlife to slavery projects. Now, that becomes very important to note, given that land acknowledgements are not just about intent, purpose, and action. I usually start anything that I do, particularly what involves this kind of settings, with Musa's dua. In the Quran, Musa's prayers in the Quran. Allahumma shrahli sadri wa yassir li amri wa hlul 'uqdatan min lisani yafqahu qawli. Allahumma shrahli sadri, O Creator, may you open thy breast, wa yassir li amri, and make my affairs easy, wa hlul 'uqdatan min lisani yafqahu qawli, and undo the knot of my tongue, such that what it is that I have to share with you all becomes accessible, if you will. I was actually at the encampment, and I was listening. And this was just slightly prior to the NYPD being called in to remove my students who were regarded as trespassers on stolen land. And surrounded by fellow faculty members as well. To answer the immediate question, have I been terminated? I have not been terminated. I actually have 2 weeks of classes to teach. I'm actually holding my class tomorrow at the encampment. God willing, I will be giving per the students' request a Friday sermon and leading Friday prayers next week, next Friday. There are several issues to highlight here. Number one, as you noted, my expertise, my training, that extends to Jewish studies and Islamic studies, as well as queer feminist and Black and Indigenous studies as well, post-colonial abolitionist. But this goes beyond Colombia for me. Essentially, what Manoush, she had lied. Because not only am I not terminated by the fact that I was not hired in October, I was hired last May. As a matter of fact, while I was working at Zionist Landgraf Cornell, and I name it Zionist, this is not a hyperbolic statement because of its collaboration with Technion, but also because it's complicit in so far as 1 million acres of stolen land and the displacement over 250 nations, at the very least. And this was an attempt to subvert, to engage in character assassination, to blacklist me insofar as any opportunity, be it at Columbia, actually, or elsewhere. Because as a matter of fact, that faculty and students have been advocating from practically the first period in which I actually spent here, insofar as that a position would be created for me for the year that is following, given my interdisciplinary expertise, but also my organizing experience that extends over 20 years, with Indigenous land defending, with Black abolition, and so on and so forth, with the Zapatistas in Chiapas in Mexico, my involvement in the so-called Arab Spring. So the fact of the matter is that Shafiq, be it she misled, but ultimately she did not engage in any kind of fact checking. She subverted my expertise, my story, my scholarship. And because my story casts aspersion at the Ivy League liberal brochure of Come to Colombia, this multicultural liberal arts institute in which many languages are spoken, because I cast aspersion or question the myth of the American dream, but rather see it as an American nightmare, as Malcolm had referred to it, because I call for the fact that land back in Palestine has to be tied to land back over here in terms of indigenous sovereignty and Black self-determination, because I work within the context of 1492 globally and what happened with Muslims and Jews in Spain and what happened with indigenous people here being called savages and heathens, savage being the racial descriptor, and heathens being the sort of religious descriptor. I mean, it's very ironic given the fact that, you know, that hearing also was very biblical. Right. In terms of sort of, you know, Shafiq being asked do you then condemn that anybody, or do you acknowledge the fact that anybody who takes a stance against Israel is part of the cursed people? right? This is why I talk about religion a lot and engage in political theology, because to me, and I don't mean to be facetious or just, but this is part of the reality that this is a religious war, not one between Muslims and Jews, but rather one that Muslims and Jews have been conscripted into vis-a-vis the white man that has usurped Christianity, you know, an Eastern tradition underneath Constantine, weaponized it as a means of imperial conquest and war, and projected that imprint onto Islam and the manifestation of Wahhabism, Muslim Brotherhood, but also insofar as Judaism in the formation, on Judaism in the formation of Zionism. Right. So the reclamation of our traditions, our spiritual traditions, liberation theology and so on and so forth is part of the work that I do and why I consider religion to be a fundamental arc. You know, a third to a fifth of the transatlantic slaves were Muslims from the Iberian Peninsula on the west coast of Africa. So it shatters that myth of the American dream. The other thing that I wanted to note, insofar as fact-checking, you know, I tend to be very precise in terms of my language. And the fact that she replicated, you know, as I said in my verbatim quote, and I've been saying this consistently, right? And I can go through all the quotes that the Washington Beacon that originally wrote that Zionist hit piece months ago had noted, because they relied on three different statements that I had done prior even to my hiring. Number one, that yes, I support Hezbollah, Hamas, and so on and so forth. But I said, I have issues because I'm somebody that believes that and argues for and works through the Quran to argue for a Quran of the oppressed, which means a Quran that is against queerphobia, that is against sexism, and hence is feminist, that is against anti-capitalism, that is against anti-authoritarianism of all its manifestations and forms, all ills that also exist, by the way, on the left. I mean, this is part of the disease and the facade. It's not like we don't have queerphobia on the left and Islamophobia on the left and so on and so forth, right? So that was my precise statement. The fact that she, you know, did not fact check that when I was saying, oh, well, look what 1,000 fighters had done. Well, I was pointing, and this was the context of my discussion, where I was saying, oh, look what 1,000 fighters of Hamas, regardless of what you think of them. I have issues with Hamas, like I said, and Hezbollah and conservative Islam. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. I have issues with the mullahs in Iran, and we can be sort of and engage in, and should engage in that kind of critique without feeding into imperialist conquest. And this is part of my point. But when I basically said that, look, there's a difference between mobilization and organization here. And this is something Kwame Ture, the great Pan-Africanist, had pointed to. Mobilization is about the short-term management of crisis. Organization is something else together because it involves understanding structures, right? And I pointed to the Zapatistas. I pointed to the Black Panthers. It's not a matter of numbers. You know, look at Tahrir. There are millions of people. Look at, you know, what Robin had called the Black Spring. It's not like we don't have Trayvon Martin's, Michael Brown's, Sandra Bland's, Breonna Taylor's. It's ongoing litany of anti-blackness, because this is part of the foundation of the settler colony, as well as, you know, ongoing genocide. So it exhibited a factless position in so many different ways on behalf of a powerful president of an elite Ivy League academy that capitulated to the confluence of war profiteering by the state. What does it mean? And this becomes a general question, because to me, this is beyond McCarthyism. This is Islamophobia. This is why 1492 becomes very important, and anti-Muslim racism that threatens the safety of students, Jewish and non-students. I have Jewish and non-Jewish students in my class who are standing against genocide, the silencing of dissent, and especially within academic institutions in which we should be able to debate. Is it an American dream or an American nightmare? Is capitalism good or bad? What is Marxism? What is anarchism? And so on and so forth. As Dr. Nadira Korvakian, who's also, you know, been exposed now to torture, literally, and this is somebody who works, a Palestinian scholar, eminent scholar who works at torture, right? As she had noted on Democracy Now! Fairly recently, right? How is it that academic institutions now have been conscripted to the agendas of settler states, especially a U.S. or a Zionist settler state? What's the point then of an academic institution which we can't argue and engage in intellectual debates that are based on knowledge, not just what it is that we, you know, have of opinion? Because you can have an opinion. That doesn't mean it's an informed opinion, ultimately, or an educated opinion. What does it mean in terms of research that requires intellectuals to be attentive to details? Women, men, children in Gaza, whose universities have been destroyed. This is the behavior of universities that then acquiesce to, you know, that religious settler institutions and threaten the safety of, again, students, fellow colleagues. And what does it mean in terms of the infantilization of youth? As if youth can't think for themselves, as if they're not watching a genocide unfold, live streamed, right? On, you know, phones that are mined and produced from another genocide in the Congo, copper and cobalt, and assembled in the form of semiconductors when we're talking about the ethnic cleansing of the Uyghur. So it was quite sad to see intellectualism reduced to this extent and degree, and to see, you know, Manoush throwing everything that academia stands for, let alone, you know, people who are experts in these fields of knowledge underneath the bus.
You've been listening to Middle East in Focus on listener-supported KPFK. I'm Esti Chandler, very fortunate to be joined today by two esteemed guests, Robin D.G. Kelly of UCLA and Mohamed Abdu of Columbia University, discussing the rising Zionist McCarthyism on American campuses from coast to coast. KPFK is a listener-supported public radio station, part of the Pacifica Network. That is why you don't hear commercials here. We are now celebrating our 75th anniversary of being on air, a considerable milestone for an independent media network whose idea was born out of the detention camp where conscientious objectors were forcibly detained during World War II. KPFK and Pacifica Network were created by people who were alarmed by the power that large corporations and governments and institutions had in shaping the stories that we are told, which in turn shaped the public narrative. We're a radio station and a radio network that took the bold move not to rely on corporations or our government for funding through advertising and underwriting, and instead, for all of these years, have relied on the community that we serve, both by having people like Negwa and me donate our time and labor to this endeavor, and by reaching out to the community we serve to donate whatever they can afford to keep the lights on and this station running. So I'm asking you now to help us keep going. Help us continue to raise the voices of people like our guest today, Mohamed Abdu and Robin D.G. Kelly, by calling 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735, or by logging on to kpfk.org to make a donation today. We literally have only 2 minutes. Robin, I wonder if you could talk about the false narratives that were framed in the prior proceedings of Congress in their long, well-documented letter that that was written by 23 Jewish faculty members at Columbia and Barnard. They wrote, quote, "We see these proceedings for the disingenuous political theater that they are, and we object to your now being cast as a villain in this political theater of new McCarthyism. The real purpose of these hearings has been to rehearse and amplify decades-long bad faith efforts to undermine universities as sites of learning, critical thinking, and knowledge production."
Right. So I actually think Muhammad answered that question, to be honest, I mean, and laid it out, because this is a long, long, long struggle. The two things that, with the minute I have left, the two things I just want to point out, one is that universities have always been contested space. Even when people think it's the classical moments, the moment that most of us have been excluded, you know? So I don't imagine a moment in which the university was what even my friends think it once was. It's still contested. It will always be contested. And the last thing I just want to say is that people have been celebrating through this, a certain kind of identity politics, the fact that the president of Columbia is Egyptian. But what Egyptian is she? She's also like... I mean, the fact that she worked for the Bank of England, which is the most colonial institution that goes back to the 17th century in the slave trade. The fact that she worked for the IMF, she was taking care of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. She comes from a class and a form of power that is not exceptional. I'm not saying that she's exceptional. This is representative of what these corporate institutions have been doing for a long time. So what we need to fight for is something much bigger, that is struggling over knowledge that's liberatory, which is always a dangerous thing. And so we can't, but I don't think that we should put too much stock in trying to save the university, but instead trying to transform social life itself and decolonize. And that, I think, is exactly what Muhammad has been getting to throughout his response. And I just hope that people keep listening.